Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to the Co-Main Event Podcast. And now your hosts, Ben Folks and Chad Dundas.
That's right. You're listening to another episode of the Co-Main Event Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. I'm Chad Dundas. That's Ben Folks. We're both longtime MMA journalists, and for the last 9 years, we've been meeting here every single week to break down all the action in the wild, weird, and occasionally wonderful world of mixed martial arts. Ben, there was a lot of drama, quite the drama, last week. Big drama show, I guess you'd say, around Paulo Costa's weight cut, or lack thereof, leading up to what was supposed to be a middleweight fight against Marvin Vettori at this UFC Fight Night event on Saturday night. Long story short, these two guys ended up fighting at light heavyweight. We'll talk about that this week, and we'll also talk about Fedor Emelianenko apparently finding the fountain of youth over there in Russia at Bellator, and then we will go ahead and look ahead to next week's non-pay-per-view pay-per-view at UFC 260. What is it, 267?
That's correct.
So a lot on the docket as usual. But first, Ben, we got to talk about the biggest fight in MMA history. Last week, the good people over at KSW released a fever dream of a trailer for Mariusz Pudzianowski versus the Bombardier.
Trailer is an interesting term for like a 6-minute video.
Yeah, mini movie is more like it. Featurette. It
was fucking drone shots in this thing, everything. Yeah,
flying over Senegal, showing the Bombardier running on the beach, making his determined face. The determined face got wiped right off the Bombardier by a hard shot from former multi-time world's strongest man, Mariusz Pudzianowski. And this thing lasted, what, like 18 seconds, something like that? And it was over. The Bombardier got tucked in for nap time right there on the KSW canvas. Mariusz Pudzianowski reigns supreme again. But the most important thing, Ben, big meaty men slapping meat out there in the KSW cage.
Just the biggest and the meatiest out there. And honestly, let's be honest with ourselves and admit that a 17-second fight or whatever it is, kind of the best case outcome there. We didn't want to see these guys three rounds deep.
Yeah, and I'll
want to see what that looks like.
I'll do you one better. The first 15 seconds of this thing didn't necessarily bode well for the level of action we were going to see over whatever the rest of the fight turned out to be. So I'm glad kind of that Pudgy went out there, met the Senegalese wrestling with his MMA as he promised to do, and scored the quick knockout. But yeah, we called it a featurette, a mini movie. But I want to give props where props are due, because KSW does a good job with this stuff, man. They always do. We have talked at length on this show going back years now how a lot of the promotional materials that the UFC puts together now, I think you could say the same thing about Bellator. It all feels a little paint by numbers at this point. You know exactly what you're going to get from Embedded. You know exactly what you're going to get from Dana White's looking for a fight, if that thing even still exists. You know what you're going to get. You know what the poster is going to look like before the UFC even unveils it. KSW, in some ways, carrying on the grand tradition of Pride Fighting Championship, is just on some weird shit with their own style, and they're giving the people what they want. And frankly, I dig the vibe over there in Poland.
Yeah. I mean, you know that Pudsey versus Bombardier would fit right in on New Year's Eve in Tokyo. If we could have done that thing back in like 2005, they might have saved Pride, Chad. We could have booked a fight like this.
Yeah.
But you're right that it, especially in contrast, feels so glaring to see, okay, here's somebody who is really going all out to try to give me some entertainment value as a viewer, as a fan. And they're doing the opposite of just some fights over there. They're going to act like whatever they're doing is just absolutely mind-blowing stuff, arena stuff.
Yeah.
And they've successfully managed to create that feel.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like they're doing what we are constantly asking the American MMA promotions to do, and that is have a little fun, put together what I believe in your words was a big, loud, dumb spectacle.
Yep.
In the wake of the Tyson Fury Deontay Wilder trilogy fight. And KSW does that, man, and it's fun to watch, and it's fun to look at the promotional stuff. And, you know, they got the freak show fights, 18 seconds. I'm not going to say this one was a fight for the ages or anything like that, unless Michael Bisping was calling it. He might have referred to it as an instant classic if he was on the call. But I don't know. It's like they give you what you want. And right now you can't say that about everybody in the MMA sphere. So big funny hats off to KSW, frankly.
Well, and you know what? I remember first hearing about your guy Puds, the strong man who was going to do some MMA. And this is back like the early days, like 2009, 2010, when he was first starting out. If you told me more than a decade later, this guy would still be holding down KSW basically on his own. And that, you know, not only would he still be an MMA fighter, but he'd be on a goddamn 4-fight winning streak.
Yeah.
Well into his mid-40s. I'd have said you're slap crazy, Chad Dundas. And yet here we are. And I got to say, it is a ride to just go through the Wikipedia page of one Marius Pudzianowski, because first you get all the MMA stuff, strongman stuff loaded up at the top. Then you get down to the section helpfully titled Outside Professional Sports. That's where they're going to tell you about his education. Graduated with a master's degree in international relations. They even tell you about his thesis. The title was Organizational Culture in Sports Marketing in the World. So that sounds like a riveting read. My favorite, though, is this section on where it just says business, where he says that he treats MMA and strongman stuff as a hobby because the money isn't that good. He owns a very successful company, a school for bodyguards, and various real estates. Those are his main sources of money. Pudzianowski also owns a truck cargo company named Pudzianowski Transport. Man, like, don't you feel like the guys will be lining up on the loading dock to see the Pudzianowski Transport truck pulling in?
Hold
Various
on.
Various real estates, Chad.
Go back to that list again. Read me that list one more time.
He owns a very successful company.
Okay, that's one. That's one thing, and then there's a comma.
A school for bodyguards.
Okay, stop. Stop. So the very successful company and the school for bodyguards are two different things. There's a comma in between those.
No, there's a parenthesis.
Oh, so the very successful company is the school for bodyguards.
School for bodyguards.
Okay, yes. That makes sense. Because if you want to be a bodyguard, who else are you going to learn from? But Marius Pudzianowski, the multi-time world strongest man who's also out here beating that ass in the cage every few months.
And various real estates. How many real estates you own, Chad?
Oh, I got a couple of estates, and they are very real, so thank you for asking. have you ever gone and did you look at the Marius Pudzianowski store, the shop, when our guy, I believe Sean Denis, posted it on Twitter this week. Sean was over there at this fight, yeah. It seemed like.
He was rubbing elbows.
Yeah, he met both the competitors. He posted pictures up on the socials with the Bombardier and Marius Pudzianowski, which was nice to get some scale, frankly. Standing next to a regular-sized man, you could really see how enormous both these guys were. But then, because I believe Pudzianowski was maybe wearing his own shirt. Or no, he posted this other one where Pudzianowski is wearing a shirt that just says the Pudzianator on it.
Okay.
And so I asked him if that was real or Photoshopped, and then he went ahead and posted the link to the Pudzianowski shop. Marius Pudzianowski has, I'm not exaggerating here, probably 30 shirts for sale.
Okay.
And each one more, better than Marvin more glorious.
The Italian Dream then, because yeah. He does not have that many shirts.
Each one more glorious than the last. You can go over and take your pick. I guess maybe, let's see here, more like 15 shirts. He's got 15 shirts available. And some Marius Pudzianowski workout towels, if you want to, okay. If you want to use those.
I'm glad you mentioned the towels. I was going to bring it up because I just navigated over here to the store. I wasn't sure what is being sold here because the workout towels, the pictures are of the towels slung over the bare-chested Marius Pudzianowski. Like, he is out there stripped to the waist, as you might say, just throwing the towel casually over one shoulder. And that's the ad for it. You expect me to be paying attention to the towel?
Well, I mean, if Marius Pudzianowski isn't going to model his own wares, who the hell else is going to do it? If you spent your entire life perfecting that body, if you are Marius Pudzianowski, what for? If for no other reason than to model your own shirts on the website, man.
I do like these shirts that have pictures of him and just say, Pudzian fight.
Yeah. It's glorious. I want a big feature story on the Marius Pudzianowski bodyguard school now, frankly. I want to know everything there is to know about it.
Well, here's what we got to do. Send somebody undercover into the school for bodyguards. And they do here's what really goes on at the Marius Pudzianowski school for bodyguards.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Like an expose, a searing expose. I demand it, frankly.
I mean, I assume that the report they'll come back with is that everything is delightful, and the man teaches you not just about bodyguarding, but about life.
Yeah, you find out some stuff about international relations in the world while you're there.
Oh, you know you're finding out about international relations, for sure.
Reminder, you're listening to the Co-Main Event podcast proper. This show drops every Monday for free in your timelines or podcast libraries. And if you like what you're listening to right now, you absolutely need to check out what's going on over on the Patreon, patreon.com/co-main-event. Ben Folks and I are over there all week providing additional podcasts for the beloved patrons, exclusive content for the beloved patrons of the Co-Main Event podcast. We got the Wednesday live chat. We got our brand new show, Doing the Damn Thing, that comes out every Thursday. We got the Friday Power Hour podcast. We got the occasional live event watch parties that we host. We're keeping track of our beloved Seattle Krakens over there. And by the way, every time we post a new blog over on comainevent.com, you can go ahead and get that emailed directly to your inbox if you happen to be a beloved patron of the Co-Main Event podcast. Check it out. 3 handy tiers of patronage available over at patreon.com/co-main-event.
And as always, I feel the need to stress, if you don't want to watch or consume any of that extra content, but you just want to support this here show, that's fine.
Yeah.
That is totally fine.
Yeah.
You can absolutely just pay for the stuff without consuming any of it, and we will be 100% okay with that.
This week we got music from our friend and longtime listener James, aka the Funk Soul Brother, a retired amateur MMA fighter and hip hop producer living in Seoul. If you like what you hear from him on the show, you can check out more at his Instagram, which I believe is instagram.com/fsbbeats. Or youtube.com/c/funksoulbrotherbeats. And as everybody knows by now, just to carry on the grand tradition of having to spell at least one word in the names of all of the musical acts we feature, we should note that the word soul in Funk Soul Brother is S-E-O-U-L, soul. That's where he lives. So check that out if you want to hear more from the Funk Soul Brother. 3 rounds, as usual, this week in the Co-Main Event podcast. In round number one, Marvin Vettori bested Paulo Costa in a light heavyweight fight on Saturday, but still refused to share his wine with him, which is just fucking cruel, man. And in round number two, Fedor Emelianenko went home to Russia, dug around in his closet until he found those old murder balls, and decided to slang them things one more time at the expense of Big Tim Johnson. And lo, there was much rejoicing, unless you were also Big Tim Johnson. And in round number three, UFC 267 is live and free this weekend on ESPN+. Thrill to the exploits of Yanni Blackjacks, Glover, Peter Yan, and Corey Sandhagen? It seems like actually a pretty great card. Did we mention that it's free? All that plus Are You Fucking Kidding Me and Just Saying Stuff. But first, like we always do about this time, let's do a little bit of listener mail.
Listener mail.
First piece of listener mail this week comes to us from our guy Cody Bernstein over there on Patreon. He writes, so according to a random tweet I just saw float across my timeline, apparently the PFL finals are this week. Ben, did you know this? Did you know the PFL is about to roll out the finals?
I think I probably found out more or less the same way. The wind whispered PFL finals and I went, oh, is that this week? And then they told me that we're doing it on Wednesday evening, and I was like, I'm playing for the Fall Hockey League Championship on Wednesday evening. Can we circle back some other time?
So that's my stance. You're busy.
I gotta go win that championship, Chad. You know that.
You are spoken for.
But I went and looked at the card and I was like, okay, this feels exactly like kind of if you'd asked me at the very beginning, what are we gonna be looking at here for a PFL finals? I'd be like, well, there's going to be a Magomed in there. Mm-hmm. Kayla Harrison's going to be there. And lo and behold, and we're going to have at least one like former UFC guy, something show up there. You got people like Antonio Carlos Jr. Helping fulfill that aspect of it. Kayla Harrison fighting the 3-1 Taylor Guardado, who I don't even want to look at the odds for that one. Magomed Karamov in there against Ray Cooper III. So, this is a PFL product. Can confirm.
Yeah. You also have a fight with Clarissa Shields. She's going to take on Abigail Montez at a women's lightweight fight. I believe that'll be her second professional women's MMA fight. She beat Brittany Elkin back in June. So
face a little adversity to do it.
That's right.
It should be interesting to see how this one goes.
How long can we make it feel weird with both Clarissa Shields and Kayla Harrison both fighting in the same division over there in PFL before something has to happen? I know we don't want to. It feels like a promotional malpractice almost to turn the young and inexperienced, at least in MMA, professional boxer Clarissa Shields, to turn her on Kayla Harrison. But can you have these two like big name women over there fighting in the same weight class forever, and you're not gonna, don't you got to do that at some point? Or are we all kind of jumping to the conclusion that Kayla Harrison is gonna piece out the PFL after this thing is over?
I would think maybe PFL's plan is to sort of Jim and Pam this one for a couple more seasons.
Okay, yeah,
But also, I think that you're gonna be dealing with maybe a time crunch in that Kayla Harrison's readiness for that level of MMA fight may not arrive in before the time comes for Kayla Harrison. Clarissa Shields' readiness for that kind of MMA fight won't be there in time for Kayla Harrison to stick around in PFL, because doesn't it feel like she's probably going to go out here? She's a 30 minus 3,500 favorite, basically a 35-1 favorite in some of the odds that I'm looking at over Taylor Guardado. She's probably going to go out there, smash her, collect another one of those checks, and people are going to go, okay, We've seen enough of this. Let's see Kayla Harrison go somewhere else, face some tougher competition. Maybe she could string one more season of this out, but I don't know. I think people are starting to lose their patience with this. I mean, we've talked before about how, especially with the state of MMA fighter pay, is good work if you can get it. If you can go on there and smash a bunch of people who aren't on your level and collect $1 million every year, you're going to do that. And so no one can blame Kayla Harrison for doing it. But I do think that people are going to just be a lot less interested in seeing it if it just continues like that.
Yeah, I agree. I think we're getting down to the end of our usefulness there with Kayla Harrison in PFL. But like also if she, as you said, wanted to stick around for a while longer and cash those giant checks for beating up some people that she's a huge favorite over, couldn't be that mad at her, especially considering the state of the rest of MMA. We also got Julia Budd fighting Caitlin Young on this card at women's lightweight. So there are some women's 155 pounders starting to show up over in PFL. Next question this week comes to us from, I believe, minor Seinfeld character Ned Isikoff.
Okay. Wait a minute. Who? Okay.
I believe he might have dated Elaine for a while.
Well, you could say... Cody Burnson might have dated Elaine.
Wow. Gonna have to get the scoop on that one. Ned Isikoff writes, I think the clear kryptonite to Dundasso is having Jason Herzog as the third person in the cage. It was very refreshing to see him take perfect control over the Blue Bruce Leroy situation, getting kneed in the head, stopped the action, took the point, gave him time, and Leroy was able to come back and win. And then later on, Herzog wasn't fucking around like so many refs that give repeated empty warnings, and he went and took a point from Paulo Costa for eye pokes. I love that. Dana White, give that man a performance of the night bonus. Jason Herzog, the proper way to say it, I think, is that he was not fucking around.
No.
On Saturday night, he was there to enforce the rules and to not hear any arguing about it, especially if you happen to be Paulo Costa. He's just going to, he's out there doing his job, frankly, doing the thing again that we ask referees to do frequently. And that is actually enforce these rules, man. Actually make them mean something. Actually take a point if you've already been warning Paulo Costa a bunch of times. And then he does poke Marvin Vettori in the eye. And then the Alex Caceres situation mentioned in this listener mail, like also, some nice work from Jason Herzog.
Yeah. And, I saw Daniel Cormier saying that he felt like that was the wrong choice to take a point there, that he should have just given him another warning. But you're like, man, you tell him the rules. We go over the rules before each one of these fights. The referees go back there, talk about the rules. I mean, they have a rules meeting. The referee's going to tell you the rules in a one-on-one, intimate, cozy setting. Any questions you have can be sorted out then. Then they get into this fight, and after the first round, you can hear Jason Herzog going over to Paulo Costa's corner and telling him about having his fingers out there. And then he goes out there and pokes the guy in the eye. How many fucking warnings do you think he ought to get? He knows the rules going in. He's warned about it in the fight, and then he keeps doing it, and one eye poke could have a significant impact on the fight, especially if the other guy is going to be pressured to continue. We all know how that goes. There should be a consequence there because he was already told he was doing it. He kept doing it, and it ended up doing the thing that he was being warned about. Take a fucking point, man. That's exactly how you ought to do it. The only problem is we just need more consistency across the board from all the other refs because you don't want to be going in there and trying to figure out, well, there's no way to know for sure what's going to happen after I commit a foul or after my opponent commits a foul. There shouldn't be that much guesswork in it. And frankly, the way Jason Herzog handled both those situations is exactly the way it should happen.
Yeah, man, if you want the rules to mean something, you got to enforce them. And so it's nice to see someone out there enforcing the rules. I am concerned now at this point, something that I had not previously considered, but I suppose it is possible that Jason Herzog is the arch enemy, the nemesis of Dundasso. And on one hand, I can't sit here and stand by while he chokes off that revenue stream for the co-main event podcast. Making bank off those t-shirts, off those them Dundasso t-shirts. Jason Herzog going to come along and spoil that for us. And on the other hand, frankly, we've been waiting a long time for a worthy adversary.
Yep.
So, you know,
and an adversary you can respect.
Yeah.
Jason Herzog.
Mm-hmm. Yep. When we did the fighter survey at The Athletic back in, 2019? Is that when we did it? Does that seem right?
2020?
2020, yeah. It was mid-pandemic. You're right. I was surprised at the time how many fighters said Jason Herzog was the best ref, and ever since then, he's been more on my radar than he was before, and I gotta say, feel like they're right. Feel like those fighters might know what they're talking about when it comes to saying who the best ref was.
Yep. No showboating in that guy's game, just, taking control and just exudes a calm confidence. There's one person in control. We know who that person is. It's Jason Herzog. End of story.
Yeah. Next question this week comes to us from Devin Scott, who writes, subject line, Nathan Donald Diaz. He writes, let's play a couple rounds of MMA speculation. Here's how it works. I'll give you guys a couple questions and you provide an answer that is based on gut, not facts. Okay. Thank God, finally. question one. With one fight left on Nathan Donald Diaz's UFC contract, who do you think that fight will be?
Well, don't you think that'll depend if he is intent on fighting out the contract and going to free agency?
Because yeah. Do you think that the now we know Diaz has one fight left on his contract, does this make the Leon Edwards fight seem a little bit more explainable to you? Because remember, we were like, kind of weird that Nathan Diaz even took the Leon Edwards fight. Like, that doesn't seem like a Diaz style fight, like not a particularly high profile opponent or a seemingly big payday. Is it possible that Nate Diaz is just intent on fighting this thing out, and that's why he accepted the Leon Edwards fight to begin with?
Yeah, it does start to make a little more sense. But then you also think they're not going to want to send Nate Diaz out on a victory if they can help it. That's just not the way the UFC typically does it. And yet, you know, he's Nate Diaz, so he's got a little bit of profile. Maybe you think there's a little bit of shine you can get for somebody else. But then also, there's a whole bunch of people that would like to fight Nate Diaz because he brings some attention to your fight, and they think right now he's more beatable than he was, you know, if you're doing the same thing 5 years ago.
Yeah, like maybe we actually mess around and get that Vicente Luque fight. I don't know. If Nate Diaz is intent on fighting out his contract, that might be something he decides to do. But which leads us into question number two. What organization does Nathan Donald Diaz end up fighting in?
Well, end up fighting in is an interesting way of putting it. But, man, I could have some fun imagining Nate Diaz going over there and being the straw that stirs the drink at Bellator.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I mean, but let's play for a second. Let's assume that he is, in fact, fighting out his contract to go test the free agent market. If he is doing that right now, wouldn't it be to think about going and fight one of them YouTube guys in a boxing match? Isn't that, like, that would be maybe the most lucrative thing, the most timely thing? I know that Jake Paul maybe has a fight set up now against the other Fury. What's that guy's name again? Tyron Fury?
Ichabod Fury?
I can't remember the name.
Teddy
Fury. But you know, if you're Nate Diaz, you'd probably either fight either Paul brother, Jake or Logie. And maybe they might make it financially worth your while. Who knows?
Or you go over there to KSW and have just an awesome time.
That's true. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anybody know what the, is weed legal over there in Poland?
I think Pudsey knows a guy, yeah. You know?
Question three, how soon will Dana White underpromote one Nathan Donald Diaz as old, getting up there, and not a needle mover? Well, probably the second he finds out the guy's going to bolt, right?
Yeah. It'll be a statement that starts with, listen, this guy hasn't been good for a long time. You know, we really tried to help the kid and did a lot for him and really built him into something, but you know, he stayed too long, and we've all seen that he's not the same guy that he used to be. Boom. That's just like page three of the Dana White promoter playbook.
Bonus round. What is the best tasting pumpkin spice beverage? Latte, beer, creamer, or martini? Bzzzt. Time's up. I'll take this one. The only acceptable answer is fuck pumpkin spice and fuck the Golden Knights.
Well, okay. Devin Scott really saved it there at the end.
Yeah. Ben, do you
martini? Did I hear pumpkin spice martini?
Yeah, man.
You just fucking with me at this point?
Do you eat, ingest any of this pumpkin spice? Would you ingest pumpkin spice in any edible form?
I'm not a fan of pumpkin as a flavoring.
I mean,
no pumpkin, nothing.
I'll eat a pumpkin pie, man. Ain't nothing wrong with that. But I don't particularly want a noticeable fruit or vegetable flavor in any of my beverages, kind of like not in my coffee. I'll just take that black. I don't really want a beer that tastes like raspberry or, you know, anything else. And so, yeah, I'm not putting many pumpkin spice in those things.
That's an interesting statement from a guy who showed up to our last UFC watch party with some kind of coconut ass beer, having me feeling like I'm drinking suntan lotion.
Wasn't that the one Danny Down sent us, though?
I don't think so.
Or was this you're talking about when I showed up with the variety pack?
The variety pack, and there was not a whole lot of variety in the variety pack. It just, anyway, I figured
you were going to drink the gross coconut ones, and I would have the other ones.
Yeah, you would have your pumpkin spice martini at your girls' night down at the Plonk. Okay. Are we going to get a charcuterie board, Chad? You know we're going to get a charcuterie board.
I will smash a charcuterie board. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. It's a plate of meat. They just bring out a big-ass plate of meat and cheese. What's wrong with that?
Yeah, it's branding. That's just all branding. That's all it is. International marketing. Ask Putzy and he knows.
You're not living if you're not eating the charcuterie plate, man. Anyway, that's going to do it for this week's listener mail. If you have a question, comment, or concern that you would like to air to the podcast in future weeks, you know how to do it. Go to the website, comainevent.com. Click the link in the top right-hand corner of the screen that says email the podcast. That'll get you in touch with us. Right now, though, we are going to go ahead and get started with round number one. Well, Ben, I guess it was sort of surprisingly businesslike all week for Marvin Vettori, as Paulo Costa admitted early in the week that he was not going to make the 185-pound limit, that they might have the fight at a catch weight, and then no, the catch weight wasn't going to work out either, and they went ahead and had to do it at 205 pounds. Marvin Vettori seemed pretty unflappable all the way through all that stuff. Then he sort of handled his business in the cage the same way. When it came down to this five-round unanimous decision victory, 48-46 across the board against Paulo Costa for Marvin Vettori. Let's talk just first about the exploded weight cut, the unsuccessful weight cut here of Paulo Costa. He came out after this fight was over and said that it was due to a torn bicep. Now, that sounds terrible. I don't want to tear my bicep. I bet that hurts. Number two, when you tear your bicep, do you just got to shut it down? Is it like he didn't get to like finish out his training camp? Is that what the weight cut, you got all screwed up? Because most of the things that I've seen people do to cut weight in mixed martial arts seem like they could still be performed with a torn bicep. So I don't know if that's the greatest excuse that I've ever heard to not make the weight, but at the same time, maybe I just don't know, man. Maybe it just like screwed up the last several weeks of Paulo Costa's training camp and he didn't get his weight to where he needed it to be to even start the weight cut. And then he decided, ah, fuck it. I don't know.
What I hear you saying is that you never heard of a torn bicep making the treadmill not work.
If I was a high school football coach, yes, that is what I would say.
I mean, you also never heard of a torn bicep making it easier to just keep great heaping mounds of food into your mouth until you blow up to 205 pounds or more.
Okay, well, that seems like kind of a low blow there.
You're right. I guess I could see in a lot of cases how you just say, hey, I had to work around an injury. I wasn't able to do all the usual stuff I'm able to do. But this one also seemed like Paulo rolled in here with a kind of fuck it, it'll be fine attitude, just in general. And some of the stuff we heard from Marvin Vettori, who claimed that, or at least, you know, he's always going to come out with some kind of argument that, hey, this guy was looking for a way out of the fight. That's always the first thing your opponent is going to go to in mixed martial arts if there's any sort of issue like this. But he said something to the effect of, first they said, you know, this weight, then this other weight. If I was going to take too big a piece of his purse, then he wasn't going to fight. It sounded like there were a lot of scenarios where Paulo Costa was basically saying, if you screw with me too much on this, I'll walk. And I won't do this fight. And that it was really Marvin Vettori being willing to sort of roll with it that kept this whole thing together.
Yeah, and you also can pretty much count on Marvin Vettori being the kind of guy who was going to take the fight, no matter what you weigh. You probably come in bombardier size, 320 pounds, and Marvin Vettori would probably still take the fight. I don't know if I believe that Paulo Costa and his team were quite so cagey as to say, all right, we're just like, we're not going to do the weight cut, and we know Marvin Vettori will take the fight anyway. But who knows, like, honestly, what went on behind closed doors. We know Marvin Vettori wasn't too pleased about it, because once the fight was over, he refused to squash the beef with Paulo Costa. Did you see this video that he made with the wine, where he's sitting in his, he's still wearing his tights and his Venom zip up UFC branded top, which I think is a nice touch, but he's like sitting in, looked like probably in his hotel room. He's got the bottle of wine. He's like, I know that I was going to give this to Paulo Costa after the fight, but he doesn't deserve it. So fuck him. I'm going to drink it. And then, Marvin Vettori drinks the wine himself, which, hey man, we know Paulo Costa's got a taste for the vino. We know that. That's, you know, that's just cruel, keeping the wine for yourself.
Well, hey, you showed up there. The guy just didn't even attempt to make the weight. Ends up screwing around with you all week over it. Then he's going to go and poke you in the eye in the fight? Yeah, I'm going to drink that wine too. I don't blame Marvin for that one.
I guess the obvious question is what this does for both guys' careers. They had a decent fight. It was just fine. Wasn't bad to watch. Five rounds of some significant action. It was back and forth. It was a pretty close fight, I thought. Looks a lot more lopsided if you look at the scorecards. Of course, Paulo Costa had that point taken away by Jason Herzog. But I thought like most of the rounds were pretty close, but I felt like they got it right that Marvin Vettori probably deserved to win it. As I mentioned earlier in the show, Michael Bisping declared it an instant classic, as soon as it was over. And I was like, well, let's not get crazy. Let's not go overboard here, but like, there's nothing wrong with it. It was a good fight. And yet so weird to have it at 205. I thought Marvin Vettori looked good. I thought Paulo Costa did all of his normal stuff. He's still out there throwing spinning kicks, I believe, in the third round, even though the UFC broadcast team had pretty much pronounced him dead during the first round. But what is it like? It's weird to have this thing at 205. Now the UFC is trying to say Paulo Costa has to fight there forever. Did this help anyone? Does it help Marvin Vettori? Did it help Paulo Costa? What can we even take away from this?
I mean, Marvin Vettori still gets to walk around and basically treat this as another win in the middleweight division, right? Because he fought a middleweight, former middleweight title contender, and basically he can just be like, I showed up to fight and they told me not to cut weight. So I didn't. But in all other ways, this should add to my middleweight credentials in the UFC. He gets that.
Yeah.
And then, but Paulo Costa, honestly, I don't know if it's the worst thing in the world for Paulo Costa to end up as a light heavyweight, at least for a time, because it's a fresh look for him. I don't think he was headed for Israel Adesanya rematch anytime soon, but you do just sort of wonder, and it's tough to tell with him, but where's that guy's head at? Because all the weirdness going on all week, but then he actually shows up and he goes, you know, five hard rounds. He's still bringing it in the fifth round. It's not like he is completely unprepared for the fight or anything, but you also get the sense that he is dangling his career by the fingertips out the window of a moving car at times. And I don't know if he realizes it. He seems to have this attitude like, fuck her. It's all just going to kind of work out. Like, drink wine before the title fight, show up way overweight, see if we can make a deal, whatever. Like, he doesn't seem worried about any of it at all. And yet, if I were involved in the handling of his career, I would get a little stressed out about some of this stuff, man. Yeah. Like, especially when you hear Dana White talking about it, you feel like, man, you were just one or two breaks here from the UFC being super mad at you and putting you in a tough spot going forward.
Yeah, man, the best way to wind up in the unemployment line is to consistently do stuff that makes Dana White feel annoyed at you. And like, Paulo Costa seems to give him some actual reason to feel that way, whereas like other people just seem to sort of stumble into it and make Dana White upset. But Paulo Costa, it seems like he actually deserves it. So yeah, I would be concerned about that also. I saw that he had said after the fight, Dana White, I mean, that Marvin Vettori had weighed like 208 and Paulo Costa weighed like 220, which kind of makes it seem like, yeah, he didn't cut any weight at all to even try to make 185, because he gets down to 205 and then hydrates back up to 220. Like that seems like the weight cut didn't even get started. But again, like, it would be a huge risk to take if that was your plan. And that's one of the things where I just can't totally reconcile that in my mind. But it does seem like not only are you taking a big chance with the UFC, but you're also taking a big chance for yourself that like that something like that, the athletic commission doesn't let the fight happen, or something else right. happens, and then you don't get paid. Marvin Vettori might get paid, but it's not a given, and the UFC is going to be pretty mad at you, I would think, if that happened.
Yeah, but on the flip side, I bet there's some light heavyweights out there who are going like, all right, I think maybe Paulo Costa would be a good fight for me if he's going to be forced to stay in this division. Now, sure, give me that one.
I mean, he would legitimately be kind of a fun entrance into that division, a division that needs all the fun entrance that it can possibly get. So if that's the way it shakes out, I don't see why not. Sure. All right, let's do Are You Fucking Kidding Me, Ben? And then we will move on to round number two. Ben, what's your Are You Fucking Kidding Me this week?
Chad, did you see this fight on the prelims ended up getting fight of the night between Gregory Rodriguez and the Iron Turtle?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, this shit, the Iron Turtle, for one thing, like, he had me just as soon as I heard the nickname. But then I see this guy go out there and fight. And at times he's fighting this one like he's just going like, all right, I'm gonna block with my face just so I can fire back, and eventually it's gonna get to this guy. And it seems like maybe that is kind of working. And then Gregory Rodriguez is like, I too do not mind blocking a punch with my face just for the opportunity to land one in return. And we're going zombie for zombie mode there in the second round with these guys. And I was sitting on the couch. I may have been doing some hooting and or hollering, Chad. Are you fucking kidding me? You can tell me it's Gregory Rodriguez and the Iron Turtle gonna go out there and have themselves a slobber knocker? Hell yes. That's all you need to say to get me to pay attention to one of these prelim fights. The Iron Turtle is out there.
Yeah.
Swinging them thangs.
Yeah. I mean, you show up with the nickname like the Iron Turtle and then you fight like that guy does. You're fast-tracked onto being one of the co-main event podcast guys, frankly.
Are you fucking kidding me?
You fucking kidding me?
Into it.
Ben, I guess you could probably sum up my Are You Fucking Kidding Me this week in six words. More felony charges for Mayhem Miller.
Oh, no.
You fucking kidding me? This one added on top to the already ugly trouble that Mayhem Miller was in due to some domestic violence issues. Now, so he's in a bar fight, according to this, both TMZ and the story that I'm looking at from MMA Junkie. But this actually occurred just days before he was arrested for the felony domestic violence in September. So it's not like he got arrested for the domestic violence, went to the jail for a while, got out, and then went out and committed more crimes. These crimes occurred before the domestic violence arrest. Not that that makes it any better, but this is like kind of weird.
Is that your positive spin? Like, yeah, no, this was just a cluster of crimes that he was out committing.
That's as positive as you can spin it. This is kind of a weird situation. He's in this bar fight, doesn't get arrested. No charges were filed at the time. But then later it turns out that one of the dudes that he was fighting against had broken ribs. So now he's got to go to the hospital. Now there's a police report. Now we're going to rack up some more felony assault and battery charges against Jason Mayhem Miller. Like, I mean, you said it all when you said it. Sounds like this guy's out there on a one-man crime spree. You fucking kidding me? Come on, Jason Miller. Everyone likes you, man. Everyone likes you. We want to see good stuff happen for you. And at this point, you may have worn out a lot of that goodwill. You fucking kidding me?
Fucking kidding me?
That is going to do it for round number one. We'll be right back with round number two.
Chad, I know I don't need to remind you of when we sat here on Friday afternoon and I held in my hands a ticket that said Fedor Emelianenko to win. And the haters laughed, Chad. They laughed. They said Fedor's washed up. Fedor can't get it done. Big Tim Johnson gonna break Fedor's heart and yours out there in Russia. Who's laughing now? Me, ha ha ha! Listen to me laugh all the way to the fucking bank. Fedor Emelianenko goes out there, can still, you know, maybe he's not the Fedor who's gonna go like three hard rounds or something. But you get in a situation early in a fight, planting your feet, going after Fedor, throwing punches and getting into a firefight with Fedor Emelianenko, he can still hurt you.
Yeah.
He reminded us of that with this first round knockout in the first couple minutes here of this fight. Quote from Scott Coker after the fact, that was really special. I've been in the fight game for a long time, and for him to really deliver in his hometown in front of all his fans, it was really fun to watch. It was a real special, and like I said, being a promoter for so long, there's a few times it just captures a moment in time, and this was that night. I was like, wow, at 45, he can still bring it.
Yeah. Now, Fedor can still, he can still do the dance if you want to do that particular dance with him early in the fight. And that's what Timothy Johnson decided to try to do. And then you end up getting hit with the three-piece. The still, like, pretty damn fast for a 45-year-old heavyweight out there throwing murder balls, slinging bungalows, however you want to say it. But, yeah, when this thing floated across the social media timelines, I felt like there was an outpouring of joy, especially from Bellator itself. Like, every Bellator account immediately was tweeting Fedor, and Scott Coker's out there tweeting the goat emoji and all this stuff. So you can tell that this one meant a lot to them. I hope it meant a lot to Fedor too. This is the first time he's been able to fight in Russia for a while. And so I know that, you know, he loves Russia. So it was probably an emotional experience for him to go out there and get this victory. Ben, he's won four of his last five at this point, the one loss being to Ryan Bader, the wins being Frank Mir, Chael Sonnen, Rampage Jackson, and now Timothy Johnson, which is kind of an oddball collection of opponents. So I guess I'm sitting over here seeing Fedor at 45 years old. I have no idea what this guy has in the tank right now. Like, common sense would tell us not a ton, but what we saw on Saturday against Timothy Johnson, like we said, is that he is still very dangerous, at least in the early stages of the fight. So he doesn't, am I wrong to say perhaps we brought the coffin out a little bit too early for Fedor Emelianenko's MMA career?
Well, Chad, yes and no. I mean, in a way, I feel somewhat when I look, kind of relax my eyes and focus on the big picture of Fedor Emelianenko's career. On one hand, it's kind of like what we were talking about after we were watching the Ken Burns Muhammad Ali documentary and then looking at Muhammad Ali's record and realizing, like, oh, okay, like, that guy fought for a long ass time and did not lose many fights. And Fedor, if people just heard people talk, like the way MMA fans talk about Fedor in the last few years, they would think that, what does he have, 10, 15 losses piling up? He's 40-6.
Yeah.
As a professional at this point.
Still very respectable record.
And yet, it seems like a lot here is dependent on matchups for Fedor at this point in his career. Because when you look at his time, especially in Bellator here, what you see is, well, when he gets matched up against a younger and a fighter who's right there still in the relevant mix of all things, those can be tough nights for Fedor. He's still, like, he's gotten a little chinny in his old age, which will happen. You know, just you can't take those punches forever and stand up to them. And, you know, that knockout to Matt Matrione, the knockout to Ryan Bader. But then, you know, he has, like, wins over, like, Fat Rampage and Tim Johnson and stuff like that. Or guys from other weight classes like Chael Sonnen. And he could still do some of the Fedor stuff. He just can't do all of the Fedor stuff, and not all of it works against everybody in 2021. You know, like that, I think that the thing that you're going to be dealing with, if Bellator is looking at what could you do with Fedor going forward, assuming that, you know, he ends up wanting to go forward, they're going to think, like, okay, there's a certain kind of fight out there for Fedor, but you got to find it. You can't just throw him in there with absolutely anybody.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's saying, see if we can get Francis Ngannou on the phone. Like, I don't think that's what any of us want to see. I don't even know if we need to or care to or would even be interested in really seeing Fedor fight a heavyweight who is involved in any kind of title picture. Like, we don't need that either. Like, we are fully into fun matchup, senior tour, don't make us sad kind of promotional stuff with Fedor. I guess I'm just saying I had fully prepared myself to feel very sad about what was going to happen in the cage against Tim Johnson, and to see him kind of afford himself in a style befitting the old Fedor, like, obviously the guy's not 20 years old anymore, but like, he can still throw the fast hands pretty hard. And so I feel less pessimistic about his immediate future now than I did before the Tim Johnson fight. But yeah, I think you're right. I think you got to go find him someone that he could, you know, someone in his same age group that he could have a fun fight with. And the good thing about heavyweight, Ben Folks, is those guys are out there.
Yep.
In that particular division. And I'm just going to say it. I'm just going to say it right now. If ever there was a time for Scott Coker to try to get a co-promotional deal going with the purveyors of the legendary Polish promotional power.
Here it comes.
And you could say, hey, you guys got a former world's strongest man over there under contract? Oh, we got a guy who loves to fight those kind of guys. You ever heard of him? You ever heard of this guy that we got, Fedor Vladimirovich Emelianenko?
Man, if somehow Bellator were to co-promote and book a Fedor versus Pudzianowski fight, I think your head would actually explode. They'd be picking little pieces of your brain matter off the walls. You would not be able to handle it.
Yeah. The entire MMA world. Can you imagine if someone with any power actually said those words, if the words Mariusz Pudzianowski against Fedor Emelianenko in a giant-ass stadium in Poland actually came out of anybody's mouth, what would happen inside the bubble? We might all just turn into pure energy and cease to exist on this mortal plane if that happened.
I mean, pick your soccer stadium and you can sell it out. I mean, in Poland or Russia, within reason. But yeah, I mean, man, if you ever wanted a reason for co-main event industries to get on a plane, fly to Lodz, Poland or something, shit, Fedor versus Puds, that'd do it.
Mm-hmm.
Might check out that school for bodyguards while we're over there. Who knows?
I mean,
a whole new line of work.
They made a hell of a mini movie about Pudzianowski versus the Bombardier. Just imagine what they could do if you had Fedor as a subject.
I mean, I just see now I never even dared to hope for something like this. Now you're going to go and put it in my head and I'm going to be disappointed if it never happens.
Well, okay. Like what are the realistic matchups? Like, I don't know if Pudzianowski is a real thing that could happen, but let's pretend you're Scott Coker, put on your Scott Coker hat. Who do you try to get for Fedor?
Well, remember when, before Fedor said that Tim Johnson was the obvious choice, we were all looking around and going, well, hey, how about that fella Fabricio Werdum? There's some history there. How about that fella Josh Barnett? He seemed interested in it. I guess the question is, what do you want out of this portion of Fedor's career? What does Fedor want? Do we want to do some old score settling, or here's the ones we never got around to in Fedor's prime and sort of better late than never fights? Do you need that? Do you need Fedor versus some other peer relevant from the same time period? Or is it just Fedor versus TBA? Is that what we're going for?
Yeah.
Fedor versus an opponent to be named later. And is what he wants out of it really stuff like this, where it's like, oh, hey, if you come to Russia once a year, I can fight. You can put some of my guys on the card. They can get an opportunity to fight, collect a paycheck, get some experience. And is that what he's in it for? Or is he in it to try to do anything specific? I think that's the questions you have to answer.
Well, and if the question is, does he only have one left? Do you want to have it be a spectacle, or do you want to have it be a win for Fedor, like an easy win for Fedor? And if so, do you need to get him some no-name guy that you could pretty reasonably expect him to kind of coast over? Or do you want to get, like you said, another one of these sort of old school names that you could bring in and have some promotional fire around it? Do you think you could get Krokop to restart his Marshall times?
Oh, you son of a bitch. You're just going to put that out into the universe.
I mean, it's not, I mean, it would be easier to watch than if you wanted to get Big Nog, right? And those are the big names that you would think of. Like, Barnett is a good one. If you're Fedor, do you want to take the chance to fight Josh Barnett in your last fight? That would be a pretty hard one, I think. You know, Big Nog was already starting to get pretty, dang long in the tooth there down toward the end. That might make us sad in multiple ways if you tried to do that one. I don't know. I haven't seen Crow Cup for a while, so I don't know what he's up to. But what kind of physical shape the guy is in. But it's one of the names that'd be near the top of my list if I was Scotty Cokes.
I bet he's somewhere right now chopping wood in the snow. And, Scott Coker helicopters in. And they have a meeting in the cabin. They're standing by the fire, and Krokop is just saying, I've left that life behind me. And Scotty Coast is just telling him, just one more. Just one restart more. The Marshall Times one more time.
Just one more, Mirko. Yeah, Scott Coker is a real Troutman style individual. Mm-hmm. You can see him making an ostentatious helicopter entrance to wherever Mirko Krokop happens to be hanging out.
You'd even be wearing the beret down over one eye.
I mean, I make one call to KSW just to see, just to float it. Yeah. Just to send a balloon, you know?
Hey, guys, just wanted to check in, see how everything is going over with you. Heard you mm-hmm. had a good one there with Puds and the Bombardier. Anywho, I was just thinking, here's something crazy. This is going to be funny for you guys. And just see. I was just playing. Unless you're going to do it.
Yeah.
Question one, the idea.
Can we get Pujanowski? If no, then question two, can we get the Bombardier?
Man, Fedor versus the Bombardier, like that basically is a Pride New Year's Eve fight. And you know what? I'm if you made Fedor versus the Bombardier, I'd be like, I see what you're doing. I want to be mad about it, but I can't.
Yeah.
Just tell me when and where.
I mean, hey, man, if you told me we'd be sitting here on Monday halfway interested in who Fedor's next opponent is going to be, I would have told you we were probably a little bit too naive to even be involved in this game. But here we are. So I'm happy for it. That's going to do it for round number two. We'll be right back with round number three. Well, Ben, you know how you can tell that there is gold on the poster, but the two actual title fights involved aren't big name affairs? And that is, you can tell because on the UFC 267 poster, it says, bigger than anything else, two title fights. That's how they're selling this. Not necessarily that you got Jan Blachowicz versus Glover Teixeira or Peter Yan versus Corey Sandhagen in an interim bantamweight title fight. It just says in big, big yellow letters, two title fights. That's what the people need to know headed into UFC 267. But I'll be perfectly honest with you, man. Knowing that that we're going to be able to tune in and watch this thing for free on ESPN Plus, the first non-pay-per-view UFC numbered event in the United States since UFC 138 in 2011. Just knowing that, I think this looks like a good card, man, because you got Yanni Blackjacks against Glover Teixeira, you got Peter Yan versus Corey Sandhagen, you got Islam Makhachev versus Dan Hooker, you got Alexander Volkov versus Marcin Tybura, you got Li Jingliang against Khamzat Chimaev, and you got Magomed Ankalaev against Volkan Oezdemir in the curtain jerker. That doesn't even get you down into the prelims, but that's a solid main card right there to give away for free on a Saturday if you're the UFC.
Yeah, and it starts at 8:30 in the morning here in the One True Time Zone on Saturday, so you can get your full day of MMA and still make it to your Halloween party of a Saturday evening.
Yeah, morning breakfast and fights. Get your coffee. Get your pumpkin spice latte if you're Ben Folks. Sit down on the couch, switch that thing on, and watch these fights. I can't complain about it, man. This seems like a good one to me.
Well, and I can see kind of why this is the one where you would, if you're trying to make the case to people who maybe don't know enough that they don't need the case made to them, two title fights is the thing you lean on, because it's hard to explain to people, like, all right, we got Jan Blachowicz and Glover Teixeira. It's not exactly like the matchup that lights anybody's hair on fire, but it's, if you're inside the bubble, you know, like, okay, it's kind of heartwarming to see Glover get another crack at the title at this point in his career. Yanni Blackjax has ended up being a much better light heavyweight champion than any of us anticipated. And so this is one of those fights where, okay, it's interesting style-wise, and it also seems like one that you can kind of feel good about in a weird way. And then you also got the bantamweight fight where you had to make an interim replacement fight that honestly kind of ended up being super awesome and interesting.
Yeah.
And if you know, then you know, and you don't need that stuff explained to you. If you don't know, it's a little bit too intricate to try to explain that easily. It's easier to just be like, two belts on the poster. Isn't that cool?
Two title fights. Yeah, man. Jan Blachowicz and Glover Teixeira main eventing a UFC quote unquote pay-per-view in the year of our Lord 2021 is not something that I would have expected a few years ago. And so I will revel in it for the time being. We just talked in the last round about how the announcement of a Fedor versus Mariusz Pudzianowski fight would set the MMA niche social scene on fire. Can you also imagine if Glover Teixeira came and pulled this thing off and won the UFC light heavyweight title at the age of 41? Happy-go-lucky Glover, a guy that everybody seems to like and enjoy watching. I think he's currently on a 5-fight win streak. Can you imagine if your champ, if the champ was Glover Teixeira? Man, it would be Glover Day all day long on social media the next day.
They'd be freaking out up there in Connecticut. Their guy, Glover Teixeira, just taking home the gold. I mean, although, do you think that, well, for one thing, if Glover goes out there and wins the title, John Jones is on Twitter that night just getting buck wild, you know?
I mean, he's going to be anyway. We know that.
Well, he's been laying a little bit low lately due to some events, due to events in his personal life. But it does seem like this is one of those fights where we're going, all right, we're fighting over the light heavyweight belt. We don't know if we necessarily believe that these are the best light heavyweights in the world right now. That is more debatable now than it has been in years, it seems like. But it does seem like in the absence, with the John Jones shadow removed from the division, we are having a different kind of fun, at least for now.
Yeah, and like I'm interested to see it. It's two likable guys going to fight for the title. Blachowicz obviously has been very good the last couple of years, better than our wildest expectations for where he would end up. And Glover is a guy who I think, as you said, is a feel-good story to see this thing. See him get this opportunity. What about Corey Sandhagen and Peter Yan here for the interim bantamweight title? Obviously, Aljamain Sterling still trying to get his neck together, still trying to recover from that surgery that he had. To your mind, what is the ideal outcome of Peter Yan versus Corey Sandhagen? Is there one thing or the other that you find more enticing or the best case scenario for the men's 135-pound division?
Well, I think promotionally, if you're the UFC, you're probably hoping for a Peter Yan victory here, right? Because then you can say when we do the sort of inevitable Peter Yan versus Aljamain Sterling fight at some point, you can call it a title unification fight, you know, and it will feel that way. It would be, as we talked about before, one of the few times where the interim belts kind of felt like the interim belt, like it kind of felt like a real thing, because you would end up in a situation where Aljamain Sterling shows up with a belt that we all saw him win, but we go, well, you're right up on the line of losing before you won via disqualification. Peter Yan, though, would also show up with a belt and we would go, well, I mean, you do sort of feel like the champs still, but only sort of because of the weirdness surrounding it. And so it would actually just work the way it's supposed to for a change. I think if Corey Sandhagen wins, then it's just chaos. I mean, it's fun chaos. Like you could work with that as well, and we could have ourselves a good time. But then we're kind of looking at like a round robin kind of situation with those three guys at the top of the bantamweight division.
Yeah, Islam Makhachev and Dan Hooker, a fight that, as we know, Dan Hooker decided to turn around and take. I think rather than go home, right? Like he had to get in the country to have his fight against Nasrat Haqparast at UFC 266 in September. That was in Las Vegas. And then basically got the opportunity to just sort of stick around to take this short notice fight after Rafael Dos Anjos pulled out with an injury at UFC 267. So he's I don't know what his training has been like. I don't know where he has been. I don't know who he's been working with. But that's going to be an interesting one to keep an eye on as well. And then, of course, a little bit further down the card, the welterweight matchup. Khamzat Chimaev returns from his highly publicized and lengthy battle with COVID-19, one that appeared as though it forced him into retirement for a hot minute before he was convinced to come back by...
Got a pep talk.
Mm-hmm. Got a pep talk from everyone's favorite Chechen dictator. And he's going out there against Li Jingliang, man, who is no slouch to fight in your comeback fight, coming off his own knockout of Santiago Ponzinibbio in January. He had lost to Neil Magny just before that at UFC 248, but he has also won 4 of his last 5. And so, you know, they're not giving you a cupcake comeback fight there if you're Khamzat Chimaev.
No, they're not. And that is, as we talked about before, I think that if you are not physically 100% and ready to be back in there, that is going to be a guy who can find it out. And that guy comes in shape. He goes hard. He's not going to go away easily. It's a tough fight to be thrown right back into. And honestly, if you're looking for like a live underdog on this card, the Leech is one worth examining.
Yeah, there was no one on the roster that the UFC was hotter on than Khamzat Chimaev before he had to take this lengthy absence with COVID-19. It will be interesting to see just promotionally how hot or cold they are on him now. And it is possible that everyone is kind of standing by waiting to see how this fight goes. But this is a guy who seemed like one of Dana White's favorites heading into this disease. And then he was damn near felled by COVID, which Dana White wants to try as hard as he possibly can, sort of doesn't even really exist. So it will be interesting to see how they grapple with all of that here with Khamzat Chimaev's return fight.
Yeah, you kind of can't not talk about it in this situation, at least.
All right, let's do just saying stuff, and then we will get out of here for this week. Ben, there was a lot of intrigue on the social medias earlier today, this morning. Fan favorite. Do we have the same just saying stuff here?
No, I mean, I heard that there was intrigue on the social medias, and I got excited. I was like, oh, yeah. What?
Joanna Jędrzejczyk removed from the women's strawweight rankings. Everybody had to slap their Deerstalker caps on, get their magnifying glasses out, and go on a search for clues here. Was there skullduggery afoot? Was there some manner of conspiracy? Then our guy, Mike Bad to the Bone, turns it up. Nope. She's just removed due to inactivity. Hadn't fought since March of 2020. Probably won't fight again until 2022. So they pulled her off the rankings for inactivity. I guess this week I'm just saying, sometimes the easiest answer really actually is just the answer. There's no conspiracy. It's not there's nothing really seemingly going on between the UFC and Joanna Jędrzejczyk, I guess. Just this is took her off for inactivity like they say you're supposed to with the rankings. Actually did it this time. Actually did the thing they were supposed to do. Just saying.
I'm just saying, we've seen some other people, perhaps with a bigger fame profile, who managed to stay on despite some inactivity. Just saying. This week, though, Jed, our guy over on Twitter, the Bohachinha Depot, at Full Contact MTWF, one of my favorite Twitter accounts out there, pointed out he's got a tweet up there where he shows how the UFC has edited the commentary from the Jan Blachowicz Israel Adesanya fight into a Jan Blachowicz promo for the Countdown show. He shows the original clip, which is happening during the fight, where it's talking about how Jan Blachowicz is fighting a perfect fight for Israel Adesanya, that basically he is giving Israel Adesanya the fight he wants, and that it's working out great for Israel, and that is, you know, the range and style that he is allowing this fight to happen is perfect for Israel Adesanya. Then you show the actual promo clip from the Countdown show, and they have edited it to just be so it sounds like Rogan is saying Jan Blachowicz is fighting a perfect fight.
Hmm. Yeah.
I'm just saying, you know what? If the UFC tricky editing team is going to be taking people out of context and making them sound like they're saying something different from what they're actually saying, at least this time they're doing it to one of their own people and not to the media or people like Ariel Helwani when they're putting together Dana White's "I was right about COVID all along and you guys were wrong" puff piece and just like self-congratulatory propaganda video. I'm just saying, at least now, if they're going to take somebody out of context, do it to your own people. Yeah. I'm just saying.
I mean, I'm just saying maybe Joe Rogan and his minions might be mad about that if somebody else had done it.
Oh, if CNN did it, you'd never hear the end of it.
But I guess it's cool if it's the UFC. Man, they do that a lot, actually, though. Like, when they do those kind of, like, promo videos, mix and match various voiceover calls with highlights that they don't necessarily go with and stuff like that. They just got a Joe Rogan soundboard that where it's like, oh, whenever they need that sound, they just throw it up there for the promo videos. But that is an obvious one, I guess.
Yeah.
All right. That's going to do it for this week's Co-Main Event Podcast. Thanks everybody for tuning in. We will be over on the Patreon page all week, patreon.com/co-main-event. Wednesday live chat, Thursday doing the damn thing, Friday power hour. Come join the team, patreon.com/co-main-event. As for right now, though, we are done. We are through. We are out.
Tweet your chat from our guy, Josiah Renaudin, who saw Johnny Walker at an airport and offered donuts. Says he couldn't stop thinking of beers.
Dunkin' Donuts.
I feel like Johnny Walker is probably a chocolate drinkless kind of guy. You know? Like, he's not going to do something more fashion or things. He's just going to be like, see that up there that's bright and has a bunch of twists and turns.
Yeah. You know, I bet Johnny Walker wants nothing more than to be recognized. And I mean that seriously. I bet you walk up to Johnny Walker and the Dunkin' Donuts wanted to take a picture, and it's the highlight of his day too, not just yours.
Fist pose and all up in there.
That's right. Get your giant coffees and your donuts and make your fist pose. Get your snap taken.